Welcome to ACMN Conversations, a podcast about marketing, media and entertainment matters in Australia. I'm ACMN's Managing Director, Lyndall Pond, and today we're so pleased to be taking a deep dive into the world of media and advertising in our conversation with Stuart Jaffray, Managing Director of Starcom Melbourne and Adelaide. With more than 7,000 employees globally, Starcom is one of the world's largest and most respected media agencies. As part of the Publicis Group, Starcom is powered by creativity, data, and media to deliver personalized experiences at scale. They are so much more than an advertising agency. In Australia, Starcom's enviable client portfolio includes high-profile household brands such as Bega, Red Energy, Seek, Snooze, Jeep, Mitre 10, and many, many more. We have the backing of this international media powerhouse and work in partnership with them as our clients' projects require. Stuart's own career is impressive. With over 20 years marketing experience in both client and agency roles in London, Sydney and Melbourne. He has a wealth of experience working across a broad cross-section of industries, my personal favourite being BMW. Stuart is currently the Managing Director for Starcom Melbourne and Adelaide, a role that he's held for the last 30 months. Prior to this, Stuart was BMW Group Australia's General Manager Marketing, where his remit included brand, digital, CRM, sponsorship and events, and product. He started his marketing career in creative and below-the-line agencies. So it goes without saying, Stuart is well-versed in all aspects of the full marketing solution. He and his team are a fantastic sounding board for us and a welcome extension to our media offering. Stuart, thank you so much for making time for us today and welcome.
Lyndall, thank you very much for having me and thank you for that very kind introduction too.
Well, I think your career speaks for itself, so we'll dive straight in. What have been the key experiences in your career progression that have led you to this role?
I think as I reflect on that, a couple of the early experiences, and these were very much by chance, I think I stumbled into marketing. I moved to London. I was talking to a friend who talked about an opportunity at an agency called International Fashion Marketing. As a 22-year-old living in London, I thought, well, that sounds cool because it had fashion in its title. And I turned up for an interview. I was offered a job. And I pretty much fell in love with it from day one because it was a below-the-line agency. In fact, direct marketing and sponsorship and events were the core specialities there. And whilst there was the immediate glitz and glamour of fashion, what I really enjoyed about it was the accountability and the countability, if you like, of direct marketing, or as we would now refer to it as CRM. So that was a major attraction to me initially. I followed through the career sort of trajectory. I moved from London into Sydney. Actually, I was following a girl who wanted to move to Sydney. She didn't end up coming. I went anyway because we'd already booked the ticket. So there was a bit of chance in that as well. And I was fortunate enough to get a job in a below-the-line agency in Sydney very quickly. There's a common theme coming through there. I was there for about a year, by which stage I'd met an Australian girl who's now my wife and the mother of three children, and she was living in Melbourne. So I transferred with the agency to Melbourne and, again, very much focused on CRM below the line. My career progressed there from an account manager up to client services director, working across a sort of broad suite of clients, and I always enjoyed agency side from the variety it gave you in terms of the breadth of categories and breadth of industry that you get to work across. But I think ultimately there was a big part in me there that had a desire to move client side. There can often be a disconnect that exists between agency and client. And I think some of that's just because there isn't enough understanding and genuine empathy between what each side is going through. And again, a bit of fortune in this, in that someone I knew said to me, BMW are looking, I was out, they'd actually been out with the general manager for marketing for BMW the night before and said they're looking for a CRM manager, you'd be perfect for it. And away I went to BMW. And that was, for me, an amazing 10 years. I mean, the opportunity to work on a brand as aspirational as BMW, it was something that you got up to do every morning with a, I think, genuine sense of pride and a smile on your face. my career trajectory there was a good one. I moved through to basically, I guess, starting in CRM. By the time I left, I was general manager of marketing. So I had sort of consumed all of marketing into my remit. There was a huge growth curve for me in doing that. Although having said that, I would say the disciplines that I had learned from a direct marketing perspective in terms of genuinely ensuring that what we were doing was accountable, delivering an ROI, helped me in good stead. So I think that I reached a stage, though, at BMW where I knew that in order to go any further within that organization, it meant going overseas or changing career trajectory, because from a marketing perspective, there wasn't anywhere further to go in Australia. And I didn't really want to do either of those things. I'd always had a passion as a marketer for the media side. I enjoy the art and the science of it and also the scale of it. And I think working in a global organization like BMW, where there is an extent of the creative being dictated out of sort of your head office, the biggest influence I could have there was a client was in media. So I had a natural affinity to that. And look, I was, again, fortunate enough to the position of managing director of Starcom was available. I knew a couple of people within the publicist group that I spoke to, and I've been here for the last 3 years. So I've really enjoyed the opportunity now, having been client side, to be able to jump back onto the agency side again.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I've got some questions about client versus agency side that I want to ask you, but your career is a great example of building on foundation upon foundation upon foundation, and what kind of maybe at the time didn't look like a plan, but looking back now looks like a really sensible trajectory of roles that are changing. But with that underlying real love and passion of what you do, it's really refreshing, and it's obviously still going.
I'm glad it seems like it was planned now as well, because I can tell you there was a large degree of fortune. I think that there often is in these things. And I think the other thing is network as well. It's so important. And the marketing community in Australia isn't large. So building that network early on really stood me in good stead as my career progressed.
Yeah, absolutely. So a little more on Starcom. Starcom is driven by human experiences. Tell us what's meant by that.
Human experience goes well beyond a simple positioning statement. It guides all of Starcom's thinking and output. So we live in a world where people are empowered by choice and technology, a world where consumers are able to carve their own pathways. And at Starcom, we recognize that to drive success for our clients, we must anticipate people's desires. We have to meet people as human beings on their terms and provide experiences that are valuable to them.
Yeah, I mean, that audience focus is just the way of the world now, isn't it? Anything that we do in media marketing, it's put the audience in our world or the customer in your world right at the heart of all your decisions. So
absolutely right, Lindell. And look, there's so much talk within the industry now about, and we're going to get into this, I'm sure, about technology, about data, and about digital, which are all cornerstones and essential parts of what we do. But it's essential that above all of that, we are still considering this as people and human beings. And it's an old saying, but data is simply people in disguise. We subscribe to that. It's really important that we continue to apply that human lens above everything else that we do. Because ultimately, we're looking to influence human behavior. It's as simple as that.
That's right, yeah. So with that sort of big picture human focus, I did want to delve a little more into the media landscape and pick your brains a bit on that ever-changing world. I lead by sort of saying that the change in media consumption over the last 5 years is just so fast-moving. It's constantly changing and adapting to this human behavior. If you could summarize the change in that time, what would it be?
It's an interesting question, because on the surface, you could say nothing's changed at all. People crave experiences. They want to be entertained. That's not changed. Audiences are still drawn to great content, and they will. And obviously, as an advertiser, you follow great content. So none of those fundamentals have changed. Lounge rooms in Australia are still dominated by TVs. I think 1.8 TVs is the average number of television sets that the Australian households currently have. We still listen to radio, and radio is still a medium that's heavily driven by talent. And people are still spending a lot of time on screens, probably too much time on screens as well, if the current research is right. It's underneath the surface, so scratch the surface, and you start to see that the media landscape has changed dramatically. No sector within media landscape has been immune for this. So if you think about TV, radio, outdoor, digital, cinema, print, all of them have been disrupted over the last 5 years. And a big driver of that is the increase in digitalization. So as all of these channels are becoming increasingly digitalized, there's more opportunity for marketers then, for personalization, and for targeting. Above that, we continue to look to find opportunities to reach our audiences at scale, but below that, you can become much more granular in terms of your targeting and your personalization as well. I think the other interesting thing that's happened is just really the sort of what we would call a convergence. So when you're talking about now what we would have talked about as TV, we will talk about screen now. And under the banner of screen, you will talk about linear TV. We no longer talk about radio, we talk about audio instead. And then whilst there has been an enormous amount of fragmentation, and I think probably screen is the area that has become most fragmented with the growth of SVOD and BVOD. So you've got Disney Plus and Binge are the latest to sort of join that in Australia. You've got Stan Sport launched last month. I think we've got sports flicks coming now. So that fragmentation continues and continues and continues. But you're also then seeing consolidation as well. If you look at Nine and Fairfax as an example there. So it's a dynamic space, but I think the fundamentals underneath that haven't really changed.
I think that's a really smart way to look at it. The fundamentals haven't changed. And a lot of this fragmentation, I agree that fragmentation's definitely happened. A lot of that's a bit of jargon as well. You know, it's a bit of a new term for an old media solution. And it's important, I think, to just kind of go back to your roots sometimes and just remember those key platforms from which we get to advertise. Some of them are represented differently now, but when it all boils down to it, it's what we've always done. It's connecting an audience to a product with an advertising opportunity.
Correct. Absolutely right. And I think the key to that then is that to ensure that above all else, we're following the consumer, putting data at the heart of your decision-making, and that everything you're doing is anchored in, where is my consumer? Where do I need to be to reach them?
Yeah. Well, that is a great segue to my next question, which is that data is king. Always has been, but right now we've just got so much of it. So give us an example of how Starcom used data to drive the media buying solutions for their clients.
Look, I think whilst, and I've already referenced this, obviously as the human experience company, we put people at the heart of everything we do. Underpinning that is the data that we have on human behavior. So do we take a data-first approach to our media buying? Yes, absolutely we do. Are most of our marketing channels now addressable and becoming more advanced in their ability to reach consumers? Yeah, absolutely they are. I'd almost say that what we're doing now is it's almost like peeling the layers back of an onion. And as you remove layers, you get more granular and more targeted. But also as you get closer to the heart, you're starting to lose scale. And that's the important point for us there is to ensure that we're getting that balance right. Because you could chase yourself too far down that path of granularity and targeting and essentially end up with a target of one. And most brands are looking for scale that is significantly greater than that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I had a chat with Lisa Bacon, the director of audiences ABC, a few weeks back now, and we talked about the power of that niche marketing, but not going too far because you know, you don't need an audience of one, and for the national broadcaster, we want everyone to be listening to the news, don't we? So,
absolutely right.
Finding absolutely. That balance, it's fascinating.
And I think, look, the other thing there that is becoming increasingly prevalent in, and I would say in every discussion we're having with every client, data, 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 and we're talking first party data, so data that is owned by the client, which as we move towards a cookie-less future becomes even more important. Second-party data, so for example, with a travel brand, as you, if you like, you would be looking to partner with a Red Planet, an Adara, Skyscanner, or Expedia in order that we can access their data sets in order to reach audiences, targeted, personalized, at scale as well. And then obviously you have the third-party data piece, and the third-party data piece is going to become complicated as we move towards a cookieless future. And that future is not far away. I think the exciting thing underneath all of that, though, is what it's doing in terms of pushing clients back to their first-party data and the importance of it. And if I go back to my CRM and direct marketing roots, that's essentially where I started off. So what we're now able to do in terms of sort of powering a media solution using that data is a lot more sophisticated than what I was doing in London 22 years ago. But that genuinely excites me.
Yeah, that's a whole new world, isn't it? And there was one term you used there, which I think might be worth getting you to clarify if you could. So question without notice, but addressable targeting or addressable?
The ability to actually be able to personalize message down to individual. Now, the reality is that with so much of the addressability, are you genuinely addressing that down to the absolute individual? No, it's addressability at scale as well is what we're looking at, because you don't have the creative production capability to genuinely change every single message down to the absolute individual. But that sort of level of addressability, which means that we are able to recognize where you are at in the purchase funnel and personalize the messaging down to you based on your behavior, becomes really, really important.
Yeah, and fascinating too. Mm. We're getting into some detail on the digital, which is great because it is such a broad term these days, and it just continues to grow and evolve, and we've got these current issues with Facebook and the news feed. Yeah. It's just such a constantly changing medium. In your opinion, what will digital media look like in the future? Where are we heading?
I think what we've seen over the last 12 months is that we have digitized human behavior across so many spheres of life at a pace that we probably achieved in 12 months what would ordinarily have taken us 5 years to do. There's been a surge, obviously, in digital media consumption because of what's happened and the implications of COVID for retail. So many of the retail brands have had to accelerate their digital transformation. And we're seeing the consumer dollars follow that as well. And we have clients within the portfolio that had been relatively traditional bricks and mortar retailers that were suddenly transacting up to 20% of their sales volume via an e-com channel that was largely embryonic just 12 months ago, but is now seen as a key driver of their business moving forwards. Now, this stuff was always on the roadmap for them, but it was a long-term roadmap. It wasn't something I think any of us expected to be able to achieve and deliver within 12 months. I think the exciting thing there is it proves that we're capable of doing that. Now, I don't necessarily want to go back to the pressures of working in the initial stages of what we all went through with the first rounds of lockdowns and the uncertainty, but I think it's quite extraordinary what we managed to achieve within that time. You referenced then sort of Facebook and news in, news out, news back in again.
Yeah, I can't keep up.
No, I know. And you've also got, I mean, there's so much other activity going on in this space in terms of regulation and scrutiny. So you've got the ACCC there, you've got the ANA there. We've obviously had GDPR. We've got an industry that is much more regulated, as it should be, in terms of data and consumer privacy. And they will continue to be focus topics for us moving forwards as well.
Yeah, and subsequently influence our choices. And yeah, it is fascinating to see where this whole Facebook and, I mean, Google's kind of done their deals, haven't they?
But absolutely. And it's interesting there as well. I mean, we often, in Australia, you're often looking out to the rest of the world to see what's happened there. We're actually leading the charge in some of these discussions now, and the rest of the world is commenting back on what's actually happening in Australia and how this will play out. And that's why it's becoming so important for Google and Facebook, because it's setting precedent for them in terms of their negotiations, discussions on a global perspective.
Yeah, and it's not the only area where Australia is leading the charge, because we have open theatres and not...
I know, how exciting.
So we're very proud of that too.
How exciting.
All eyes on Australia. So switching over to broadcast now, another rapidly changing a medium with all the streaming services, but free-to-air TV is still a really critical part of our media mix. As you say, TVs are still in every, household in Australia. It's really important for our entertainment clients. But what does broadcast look like now, and especially for advertisers? And what do you think the emerging trends are in that space?
No secret, the broadcast landscape is evolving, continues to evolve, continues to fragment with the explosion of secondary screens and new entrants into the market. So what this is doing is it's taking video consumption away from free-to-air TV. And as a result, we have seen a continuation of audience declines. Now, in 2020, some of this was actually offset by increases in audiences from a news perspective, as an example. And for advertisers, I would say that, I mean, look, TV continues to be such an important part of the media mix for so many, because it's your ability to be able to communicate with sound, with vision, with emotion, in what is largely a brand safe environment as well, which is really, really important. But underneath that, you have to recognize as a marketer the trends and the growth of something, for example, for BVOD, so broadcast video on demand, and what you are then capable and able to do with that to extend reach, which essentially enables you to offset some of those audience declines that you'll be experiencing on free-to-air TV. Use BVOD then in order to be able to cover that as a reach extension piece. I think the other thing that we've really seen over the last 12 months is that COVID just supercharged the uptake of SVOD services. So we were all at home. We needed to entertain ourselves, and we've grown used to being able to binge watch. So I read today, actually, in Disney Plus launched in Australia last year, they've now hit 100 million subscribers, paid subscribers globally. So that was reported today. Binge obviously launched in Australia last year, and these come alongside all of your sort of Netflixes, your Amazon Primes, your Stans that we already had in market. And then the next part that I think is really interesting is what's going on from a sports right perspective there. So you've got Stan Sports taking the rights for rugby. You've got Amazon Prime now taking on swimming. We've got Sportsflick entering the market and reportedly taking the European football via the Champions League. So I dread to think what my subscriptions costs are going to start to look like in 12 months' time if we continue on like this.
Well, I walked in on my son watching free-to-air television the other day, and he was a bit unsure what an ad was because it was interrupting his viewing.
I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that at all. But the interesting thing there as well is that TV still reaches, and the latest Think TV numbers, I think, say 20 million Australians every single month. I mean, that number is huge. It's an extraordinary reach that you're able to achieve. We've obviously got a significant moment, TV moment, coming later on this year, which will be the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And the Olympics this year as an event, I think, will be quite extraordinary because it's going to be the first genuinely sort of global event. I know we've just had the Oz Open here, but let's be honest, it doesn't have that broad-reaching global appeal that something like the Olympics does. And I think that, let's assume it does go ahead, because all indications are that it will, as a broadcast event this year, I think that's going to be huge.
Oh, it will be massive, because the travel's not going to be there, and they're not going to be letting people from outside the country or linked to the competitors into some of the events. So, yeah, the broadcast just got worth a whole lot more. Yeah.
And I think from a human perspective as well, we still crave, we have an absolute craving for that level of connectiveness that you can genuinely get from live TV or linear TV, where it still charges those social media conversations, those water cooler conversations, because it's a shared experience. And as I said, from a global perspective, the Olympics will be the first one that we've had of its kind in a COVID era. Also in a time zone that's friendly for Australia, which makes it really exciting for us as well.
Yeah, about time. moving on now to audio, also an emerging platform with podcast, digital radio, the online offering of the traditional radio stations. It's still a really important part of the media mix for us. So give us the lay of land of your perspective in that audio space.
Oh, look, here's another one that continues to innovate. As an example, just last month, so Southern Cross Austereo launched their Listener app, which has brought together all of their radio, their podcasts, their music and the news all into one environment. The overall audio ad revenue declined, I think, by around 23% in 2020. Having said that, audio has had a very, very strong start to 2021. And COVID clearly impacted radio listening last year. And as you would expect, things like breakfast and drive experienced audience declines. But having said that, morning actually grew because consumers were changing their listening habits to actually reflect what they were doing in terms of sort of working from home. I think that what you'll continue to see in this space is continuation of increases in digital audio consumption. And during the pandemic, people turned to music, radio, podcasts for both entertainment and information. I think, interestingly, that increased consumption of digital audio and podcast is a trend that we saw last year that will continue on into 2021. The interesting thing for me there as well is that radio is often something that you'll consider as a live, listen live environment. What we're actually seeing is more and more people tuning in to listen to radio on demand because they have an affinity to certain talent. Now, it could be Kyle and Jackie O. It could be Kate Lambrook, but people do have an affinity to talent. Whereas we grew up listening to this as live, if you have that affinity to the talent, and we also now demand to be able to do things when we want, where we want, we're also sort of applying that back to the way that we listen as well.
Yeah, that's a fascinating insight, actually, and makes perfect sense because people are sort of so time poor, they need to just find their window to consume whatever media they decide they want to consume. So, yeah, I'd never even thought about that being not necessarily a live channel. That's fascinating.
The other part that's growing this as well is that just the continued uptake of smart speakers in households and we're increasingly now having conversations with clients, not just about what your brand looks like, but also what it sounds like as well. And so as the uptake of smart speakers continues and continues onwards, that sort of sonic part, if you like, of your brand is going to become increasingly important. And I think, again, that's interesting, but it's something else as a marketer you now have to consider. So, you know, I keep every day you look at the list and there is another thing that has been added into that from a complexity perspective.
And, you know, does it make us too fragmented where there are times when we just need to advertise for scale? So, watch the space, I think, on that one. Moving on to outdoor, obviously prior to COVID, outdoor was, you know, really growing in strength. Yep. It was certainly taking a lot more of the media dollars in our industry. But now we've had this stay indoors message. People's habits have really dramatically changed in terms of how they move around. What impact do you think that's had on advertisers' choices with media and outdoor specifically?
Oh, look, if you look at SMI for last year, I think I'm right in saying $370 million worth of revenue evaporated out of the outdoor sector, which is huge. Having said that, that wasn't experienced equally across all inventory. So if you think about airports, large format on major arterials, street furniture in our CBDs, yeah, of course they were hurt by the stay indoors messaging and the lockdowns. But having said that, we also saw consumers spending a lot more time in the suburbs and a lot more time actually at supermarkets as well, as we panic buy, purchased and stockpiled. And this created some new opportunities that are actually probably already there that sometimes we ignored as we, you know, as you went after some of those sort of bigger high impact environments. I think I referenced this earlier on. So essentially what you saw marketers doing there was following the audience. And so, they weren't at the airports, but we have these amazing other opportunities using the same medium to reach them elsewhere in terms of where they were at the time. I think the other things for outdoor, obviously, they have continued to innovate and add new possibilities to us via digitalizations of their assets. And I think what I saw from this sector in 2020, which I actually think is really nice, that they often talk to the fact that they are public spaces, public space media. And I think we really saw that sort of come to life in 2020 in terms of some efforts for, I guess, what you'd say is positive social impact. So, two examples of that: public service announcements that were needed for in terms of immediacy around bushfire warnings would be one. So a genuine sort of public service being provided there. And then I think as something that was just really innovative and fun was the way that they got involved in the national teddy bear hunt, which obviously, look, I've got children. We had teddy bears in the front, in the windows of the front room, and you'd walk down the street and there they were. But also then all of a sudden there they were appearing in outdoor, and I think that was lovely. So I hope we continue to see more of that over the coming years.
Yeah, well, that was heartwarming, wasn't it? That we've sort of touched on all of the various avenues. Haven't really talked about print, but I sort of feel like we all know where print is heading, but we still use it to some degree. But I think really the key for us is campaign integration. So what's your take on ensuring a fully integrated campaign and sales strategy? Does that apply to other clients? How do you guys tackle it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I was told, and I remember this, probably my second day at BMW, I think the general manager of sales said to me, if you don't work in sales, you work for sales. And that was drilled into my head for the next 10 years. And ultimately, what we are delivering from a marketing perspective has to deliver against the sales strategy. It's as simple as that. And vice versa as well, by the way. The two have to sit hand in glove with each other. And if there is a disconnect between the two, you are going to have issues within your business.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. And our world is very simple. Campaign, ticket sales.
Bums on seats, I agree. And if you're not delivering them, then you've got a problem straight away.
Yeah. It's hand in glove for sure. Mm. Now, we touched on this earlier. You switched from what we in the business called client side to agency side in 2018, and your career sort of varied between the two. What do you feel are some of the main differences between those two sides in the media and marketing relationship?
I think on the client side, your exposure, involvement, influence across the entirety of the marketing mix, and I'm old school here, let's go to 4 P's of product, price, place, promotion. You're involved across all four of them, and the product and the place parts, what is the product and where is it actually distributed through, are two critical parts of that. When you're working in the media agency side, yes, you will have data that supports and is able to inform clients around product and place, but ultimately, you're focusing the majority of your side on one of those P's. So on the client side, I think you have a much more sort of broader exposure across the entirety of marketing. Interestingly, though, when you flip into agency side and in terms of the media side for me now here, you go very, very deep in terms of your specialism around media, but you do it across a breadth of categories. So on both sides, I think there's breadth and depth, but then different areas. What I have enjoyed is actually having had the opportunity to be able to do both. I really, really enjoyed so much of what I was able to do from a client side perspective. But now back in the agency environment, I love the ability to go from a meeting with a retail client into a conversation FMCG, bouncing into auto, and then somewhere else after that as well. And I think that there are so many learnings across industries and across categories that you're able to provide back to clients as well. So that's exciting. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the learnings in your world are really fascinating. And we tried this with a retail client that focuses on whatever, chemist goods. And then we tried the same thing with a different client and it worked as well. I mean, they're really positive experiences, aren't they? Now, having spent much of your career in media, what's your biggest learning, do you think?
You're not the consumer.
Yeah, that's great advice. Yeah, let the data do talking.
Absolutely. And I think, look, it's interesting as well, when you're on the client side, you can become very myopic about your own brand and the way that your own brand is perceived. It's really important that you're able to step away from that. I've sat in too many meetings over my career where people have given examples where they said, but this is what I, and you have to stop that and say, but tack on a minute, you're not representative of our target audience.
Yeah, that's so true. That comes up for us every now and then as well. Mm. What would your advice be for people looking to pursue a career in media, comms, marketing, this sort of world?
Curiosity. Curiosity, curiosity, curiosity. I mean, it is an environment and it is an industry where people that are genuinely curious, that want to uncover and get to the root of human behavior, will thrive. You need to have a genuine interest in, I mean, that should go for any industry and any job, by the way. You should have a genuine interest and a genuine curiosity in terms of what it is that you're doing. And I think the other thing is people need to read and read and read and read and read and read. It is an industry where unlike, let's say, accounting or law or some of these other places where you go through a path educationally in order to become qualified to be able to practice, that doesn't exist within marketing. It doesn't mean you can't achieve that and can't do it yourself, though. There are plenty of courses, obviously, that you can take, and there's plenty of reading out there as well, and there are certain books that everyone that is working in marketing should know and should understand in terms of some of the practices that we should be living up to.
Yeah, that's great advice. Do any come to mind?
Look, I think that, you know, everyone's going to refer to How Brands Grow and Amber Bass Theory. I think that it should be probably the first book on the reading list and then work on from there. I think it's important to read and be continuing to sort of engage in the trade press. I think that there are people out there that are obviously very vocal, like Mark Ritson. Like him or not, it's important to be listening to what people are saying and having a view on the debate and where you actually sit here in terms of the conversation.
Yeah, that's great advice. And looking at, you know, does this apply to my industry or not? What can I learn from it? How do I change it and apply it to my industry?
Correct.
Yeah, great way to learn. And this one's a little bit left of centre because it is not your main area, but any advice for an arts marketer in today's world?
You're not the consumer. within the arts sector as well, I think that, and rightly so, you're extraordinarily passionate and invested in the product and the content. That doesn't mean that you are reflective of the way that consumers are going to respond to it. So you got to be able to divorce those two things.
Yeah, terrific thinking. That was such a fascinating insight into a really critical part of the marketing mix. Thank you for sharing all of that with us. We do like to ask a few questions at the end that don't directly relate to your discipline. And most importantly for us, we do like to ask all of our guests, why does arts matter?
Can I selfishly just bring that back to my industry?
Please.
Okay, good. I was pondering this earlier on because you did warn me that you might ask this question. Now, look, selfishly, without arts, I wouldn't have a job. Because if you think about the arts and you think about TV, radio, cinema, great content and arts drives audiences. And if there's no audience there, I can't reach consumers. And if I can't reach consumers, our client brands won't grow and I will be unemployed. So arts is essential to what I do.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think at the end of all these podcasts, I'm going to piece together everybody's answers to why arts matters, because they're just so varied and different and all really valid. So yeah, that's another new take. I like it. Thank you. Staying in the arts theme, what was the last piece of great theatre that you saw?
You were responsible for this, actually. And I'm going to be honest with you. When I was invited to this, I had no interest in going, and it was Shrek the musical. So I went along partially because I felt obliged and partially because I'd made the mistake of telling two of my three kids that I could get us tickets. I loved it. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I was drawn in from start to finish. And I honestly say, having not wanted to go, I'd happily go and watch it again. It was great entertainment.
Oh, isn't that fantastic? We'll let Frosty know.
And the kids loved it as well, by the way. So
yeah. Oh, that was well received on tour, that one. So yeah, oh, very good. And lastly, what else, because you've been, you know, doing all of your media and marketing reading, but what else have you been reading, watching, listening to? Give us a little insight.
Watching, we've just finished binge watching WandaVision. I binged that with the family. All of us loved it. I am halfway through watching It's a Sin at the moment with my wife. I am definitely not watching that with the children because it is not age appropriate at all. And then, I mean, look, during COVID, I actually read a lot more. I found that without the commitment of running the children around all weekend to sports and parties and everything else, I had more time on my hand at the weekend. So I've really enjoyed getting back into books again. I'm currently reading Song of Crocodile. I can't tell you the author's name because it's on my Kindle. I'm actually amazed that I can tell you what the book's called.
Well done.
Because you sort of lose the title of the book and the author's name in the Kindle. But it's a wonderful novel. It's an Australian novel following we're up to the third generation at the moment of a family, an Indigenous family. It's beautifully written, but I guess a terrible sort of backdrop of racism and prejudice to it. But it's a wonderfully written Australian book, so I'm enjoying that.
Well, that's a terrific recommendation. Thank you. We might put that in our show notes. Stuart, thank you so much for your time today. It's just a joy to listen to somebody so knowledgeable in that area. You're so connected to the data and the research, but so sensible in the human and audience application. And that is what takes, you know, kind of good media buying to great media buying, because it's just become so much more real. So I really appreciate you sharing all of that knowledge with us today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the opportunity. I've really enjoyed myself today. So that was great.